Hello and welcome to this edition of Tuesdays with the Red Tide Euclid. As usual, I'm your host, Chris Manning, alongside the esteemed Trevor Magnotti. There's only one game left in the Cavaliers, including Cavaliers season. They were eliminated.
Yeah.
It's an NBA season that's long when your team is very good. More struggles. Like, I can't imagine being a Pacers fan right now. But, looking at this team, you know, they eliminated last week the same night that they beat the Detroit Pistons and the Hawks won, eliminated them from the playoffs. Have lost two straight sets, and we're going to talk specifically about last night's game first. But Trevor, apparently you have a question for me that you want to catch me off guard with. So
yeah, we know Outkast got together.
Oh yeah.
On Friday night, did Coachella. Which Cavalier do you think listens to the most Outkast?
CJ Miles.
Okay, that was not who I was thinking initially. But
who are you
going to
say?
I was probably going to say Dion.
Nah, Dion. Okay, like Dion's music taste to me is like he's obviously a meat guy. He loves J. Cole. Nah, Dion, as much as Dion probably likes
Dion, doesn't get back to his roots as much as CJ.
He doesn't go to the deep cuts. Like, CJ to me seems like a guy who would get really into the deep cuts of Outkast.
Gotcha.
I think that's an obvious pick. Because, like, Kyrie likes a lot of R&B more than like rap. So,
yeah.
I go CJ Miles.
All right.
Okay, so let's talk about the Celtics game. I watched it last night when it somehow got on Synergy really, really fast.
Yeah, that was impressive.
Great. Watched it. I can watch a lot because it was working, and it came off the heels of a very uninspiring Milwaukee game. The Cavs were swept by two teams this season, the Charlotte Bobcats and the Boston Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
The teams that are relatively close to where they are. But the Celtics, there's some idiocracy on Twitter, as you put in your post, but that's not the kind of thing you want at the end of the season. That's a very general way to say it, but you have a young team that just gets eliminated from the playoffs. And then you go out and lose to the worst team in the NBA, and then one of the other worst teams in the NBA that was missing players.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly Olynyk was the best player in that game, played the best game of anyone last night.
Best game of his career.
Yeah, and I know you're not expecting guys to really, you know, maybe put forth, like, maximum effort at this point, but at the same time, come on, like, what was last night?
It was a rough game to see, obviously, when you're just blown off the ball from the opening tip by this Boston Celtics team. It's not fun to watch. It wasn't anything that was, you know, even remotely entertaining. But at the end of the day, I don't care. The Celtics are playing a bunch of guys that they've got. Yeah, Jeff Green playing, but Avery Bradley contract push, Brandon Bass contract push. Kelly Olynyk's still trying to prove himself in the league because he's quietly probably had one of the best rookie seasons of anybody in this class, but nobody's talked about him, so a game like last night really helps him. And then you've got Phil Pressey, Chris Johnson, Joel Anthony, and Chris Babb are the other players for the Celtics that played. All four of those guys, none of them were in a regular rotation at the beginning of the season. All four of them might not be in one next year. They're trying to make a last-ditch push to get noticed and get picked up on an NBA roster next year. Meanwhile, for the Cavs, who has incentive to play in a game like this? Who has incentive to play well? Maybe Alonzo G, maybe Spencer Hawes. Alonzo G actually played great last night, for what it's worth.
Except for his little incident in the first half.
Yeah, but he had that sweet dunk and everything, and he ended up being the only player on the Cavs that shot over 50% from the field.
His contract's non-guaranteed for next year, so he's probably
gone. So it was important for him, but outside of that, there's nobody really that we were going to learn anything about in this game from the Cavs, and there was no one that with any sort of incentive to. And really, there hasn't been since the Charlotte and Atlanta losses.
Are you concerned at all, though, about the, like, just the lack of, I know it's the end of the season, but it's just, like, the lack of effort. It's a very general way to say it, and I understand, like, you're doing the playoffs and it doesn't mean anything, but it's, you don't want to end that season on that note, I don't think anyone in the locker room would say, I want, you know, like, these don't matter. Like, it's a bad look.
See, I feel like everybody would make that argument in the locker room. Everybody just wants the season to be over. The effort problems in November, that was an issue. The effort problems in January, that was an issue. Since February, though, they have been playing very hard, night in, night out. They've been playing very well. And up until they got eliminated, they were putting forth good effort in a majority of the games between the All-Star break and the last week of the season. I'm not going to change my views on this team or anyone on this team because they decided to just kind of like put it on cruise control when they got eliminated from the playoffs. The last thing I want to do is take away from the last 2.5 months of basketball in order to make assumptions about this week of basketball when nothing matters to this team. That it doesn't make sense to me to question the effort of this team when the past 2.5 months have been great on that front, in my opinion.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's just, to put the flip side of this, it's just the end of the season is just a time where I know there's not a lot going on, like you're out of the playoffs, but you just don't really want to see them just like fall off like that and just kind of look so uninspired. I mean, I know it doesn't matter, but it's just like, it's just frustrating. It's like it doesn't like add up. And it, you know, you want like, this is like a cliche way to look at it, I guess, but I don't think you'd see like, you have certain, I mean, you have the lead teams like take nights off when they need to rest.
Yeah.
But I don't think if you put them in this situation that they're gonna just like stop.
Yeah, from a fan perspective, it's very frustrating. I understand that, but realistically, 3 weeks from now, are we gonna care that they didn't show up against the Bucks and Celtics?
I think it puts because of how it ends, especially depending on how Wednesday ends. I think it puts a little bit of a damper on a season that turned out better than I had expected midway through the year.
Yeah.
It just puts like a bad end. It puts kind of like a little bit of a bad taste. I guess I just look at it kind of negatively, just because you got so close and you fought so like to get back. When you got eliminated, it was just like, I understand there's gonna be like a drop off, like there's gonna be frustrations, but I don't think it should be to the point where you're getting blown out by the Boston Celtics.
Yeah. Another thing to consider here was it was a back to back, and Boston was coming well rested, motivated, and the Cavs are unmotivated and tired. Like this stuff happens when that happens. I mean, earlier this week, Detroit came off a back-to-back. They are completely unmotivated, and the Cavs blew them out in Detroit. Like,
happens. Yeah, and I think this is what we'll probably need to rediscuss after this with the Nets. Just kind of look at it that way, just because I think the Nets game to me is going to be, depending on who the Nets play, depending on how their seeding kind of looks on Wednesday, they could rest a lot of people. You don't know who's going to play in the Cavs. Is the Wildang going to play again?
Don't think so.
So, you know, we'll have to see about that. But different takes on last night's game. Just bad, though. I mean, there's just a lot of bad coming out of last night's game. A lot of bad coming out of Friday's game as well. But, you know, Friday was almost worse for me just because, granted, that was one of the watch live, but the Bucks are just so much, like, the Celtics are bad and the Cavs are pretty bad, but the Bucks are just,
The Bucks starting lineups lately have been very ugly.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing to me that excites me about the Bucks is Giannis. He's still very raw.
Yeah.
Like, he's been the most exciting rookie this year, but that's not just due to the stuff on the court, because he's so interesting and he's so, like, such a bubbly personality.
Yeah.
And that doesn't excuse how bad they are on the court. But that's a little bit on last night's game. You know, they also beat the Pistons last week, but.
Yeah. Also, Brooklyn is 1.5 ahead of Washington, so that could very easily be a tie for the fifth spot by the time that they play on Wednesday. So this could be an ugly game if the Nets are playing everyone.
Yeah, and we'll have to definitely watch that and see how that plays out. But moving on, there's two Cavaliers. We get to the off season, and we'll do this not just now, but when it gets to July. The Cavaliers are going to have a decent amount of free agents.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to make some interesting choices about their personnel. I think the one that's going to be the most scrutinized, just because of how long he's been with the Cavaliers, is Anderson Varejao.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to save the one for later. We're going to talk about two guys who... One guy who I think has a decent job of coming back, and one guy that I'm kind of just assuming is going somewhere else. And that's Charles the Wildang. Let's start with the Wildang. He hasn't played. Someone tells me he probably won't play Wednesday.
No.
I guess the only question is how do you characterize his likely half season tenure with the Cavaliers?
I mean, it was a disappointment for me, especially because I grew up watching Wildang in Chicago, and he always he always was one of those guys that no matter what, you knew you were going to get maximum effort out of. And I feel like at many points throughout throughout his time with the Cavaliers, he just didn't give maximal effort. Granted, he's Schrodinger's cat when it comes to injuries. He's always simultaneously banged up and healthy. So that doesn't really help things, but it was really a disappointment, especially on the defensive end. He didn't really offer as much defensively as we were all expecting him to early in the season. That was a big disappointment. Offensively, at times he was very good for this team. His shot selection was horrible at times, but when he was allowing the other players on the team to kind of take the lead in the scoring, and he was filling in by, you know, getting spot-up opportunities and getting off-ball cuts to the rim, that was when he was at his most effective, and that was when the Cavs offense was at its most effective. So there's a really hit-or-miss tenure with Deng. It just felt like he had an on-off switch, much like the rest of this team, and that wasn't what we wanted to see. So it was a disappointment, I would say, and it was probably disappointing for him too.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of reports about him, you know, things coming out about how he wasn't happy about Chris Grant getting fired,
mm-hmm.
Which I understand. There's a lot of talk about him. I guess just not really gelling with his teammates. That wasn't surprising to me. I think if he came back, if he was going to be on this team next year, he'd have a better overall season.
Yeah.
I don't think that's likely, but I think it's just you can chalk up some of his struggles to adjusting to a totally different defensive scheme. And I know he's like a pro, like he's a veteran, but Mike Brown and Thibodeau are just kind of totally different coaches,
mm-hmm.
And different stratospheres of ability and. He's playing with a very different group of guys. In Chicago, even though the transition, like, stylistically was very similar, in Cleveland, when he came over, he's not playing with Joakim Noah and Taj Gibson anymore.
Yeah.
He's not playing with Kirk Heinrich and Jimmy Butler. He's playing with Deion Waiters and Kyrie. He's playing with, like, a much younger team.
Yeah.
A team with, like, a lot less ability. So I think that was probably hard on him. Yeah, nor did I agree. I think it was disappointing. When it happened, I wrote a very long piece about how I didn't think it was going to be the playoff changer, but I liked the aggressive move of it. And
mm-hmm.
I still stand by. I think it was a move that made a lot
of
sense.
Yeah, it was definitely a good move because you got rid of Bynum.
You got rid of Bynum
as well.
You know, you lose maybe a first round pick down the road, but whatever.
That Kings pick is just it was never going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't think that his pick is ever going to get seen.
For at least that was a first rounder.
Yeah.
You know what, like. It happens. You go. You went for it. You tried. Maybe there'll be some rub off. I'd like to kind of see what guys had to say once he is gone, because then we'll get a little bit more honesty there. Once guys are gone, just when you talk, even at a college, when I'm doing college media, you know, you just kind of get a little more honesty once things are a little bit separated and they can kind of speak their mind a little bit more.
Yeah.
But you know what? I guess if I can name it great, I give it about a C. You know, he was good on some nights, carried the offense on it, but he just never looked really functional. I guess before we look at Spencer Hall, I think there's a couple interesting spots for this offseason.
Absolutely.
I know you love Dallas. I like that idea as well,
mm-hmm.
Depending on how he is. But I also really like the idea of moving to Phoenix.
Yeah.
I don't know how – I would like to talk to someone who knows the Suns a little bit better than I do, but I think of them as just needing a guy who can kind of do a little bit of things and kind of be a really, really legitimate star in small forward. You can put Gerald Green on the bench and get more out of him there.
I just got the idea of Gerald Green. He checks specialist off the bench, and I don't know how that helps. I don't know if that helps them as much as we want it to.
He's been good this year.
He's been really good.
But I like him in Phoenix. I think Dallas would make sense.
Washington is an underrated spot. I don't think that they'll actually.
They have some money committed there, though.
Yeah, I don't think that they'll have the money to put him there, but I like the fit.
Detroit would also be like, if they could move someone out of that big cluster, he'd be nice. Then he'd work there as well. You never count the Lakers just like throwing money at him, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean,
it'll be, yeah.
But he'll probably get five or six like good offers this offseason.
I think. What do you think the deal he gets is?
You know what, he reportedly wanted 15. He's nowhere not going to get that. I mean, he would have needed like a Nova Hot second half of the Cavs to really get that kind of money. I'm expecting about 10.
Okay.
I would expect between let's say anywhere between 9 and 11, you know, like somewhere in there for 3 years. I wouldn't give him more than 3 years. I'd give him maybe 4.
Yeah.
But if you're Dallas, you want to give him like 3. I mean, if you're like, depending on where he signs, I think it's going to depend on the number of years. I think Dallas could give him, I think like a 3-year $10 million, $3 million, $30 million deal with Dallas would be pretty good.
Yeah.
I think Phoenix, if depending on their cap space, could go 4.
Mm-hmm.
I think 4 makes sense in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Because they could, he could, you could reduce his minutes, have a really good medical staff, and he, you know, wouldn't be called on to do as much as he necessarily was.
Absolutely.
I'd like to see him most in Phoenix, but that, all at the same time, I think there's a lot of free agents. I think it would work really well. Like, for whatever reason, the big three breaks up in Miami.
Yeah,
I know
you're on the Bosch train.
I want Bosch to Phoenix real bad.
Yeah.
I think that'd be perfect.
Yeah. I think,
Him to Washington, but, it's one of those two for me for Bosch would be great. But, for Dang, I just think between 9 and 11, 3 to 4 years, anything more than that, it's a little bit of an overpay and you're going to get kind of burned on the back end of that deal, I think. It's just, I think, even though when he was here, I talked to John Greenberg from Eastern Chicago, I asked him a question about the minutes, you know, the fiasco with Thibodeau and Dang and all those guys. And he said it's not as big of a deal as you would think it is. I kind of still think that you're kind of wearing guys down at that point. I mean, you look at Joakim, he's definitely beat up. I mean, Hibbert's played so many minutes this year and just taking shots at it, it's slowing him down.
Yeah.
And his rebounding rates are down. Like, he just isn't the same player right now. So in that case, I really think 3 to 4, most of him is 11. What about you? I know you love him in Dallas, just like I like him.
I think the max that he gets is the Andre Iguodala deal, 4 years, $12 million, from a playoff contender. I think that that's probably the most that he gets. I think that's a good deal for him, because if you put him on Phoenix, he is playing the Iguodala role.
Yeah, but there's a slight difference. Iguodala's a better. Better defender at this point, for one. Like, the Warriors signed him with the mind saying that he's one of the best 5 guys
in
the league.
But,
and then it's just also, he's also a much more capable ball, like, distributor at the top of the key than Dick.
That's fair, but for what Phoenix, we'll say Phoenix or Dallas is going
to
want him to do,
he
offers the same kind of leap in ability that Iguodala offered Golden State. Like,
right.
Iguodala was brought in to be like a defensive stopper and a three-point guy and a guy that can handle the ball in situations where Curry and Klay Thompson are sitting. Dang is going to be asked to be an off-ball cutter, be an isolation guy, and be a guy that can defend threes and fours to take pressure off Markieff Morris. Like, I think that he is going to offer the same level of he's going to offer different things to Phoenix than Iguodala offers to Golden State, but it's going to be at about the same level of talent for those things. So I think that's a very, very solid. I think that's a very, very solid deal. I think I've been on the most he should get is like $9 million. He's old. He's banged up. All that. But realistically, thinking about it, him getting $12 million a year on a playoff contender, I think makes sense.
And I can see that as well. I'd be a little skeptical of paying that much because I still definitely worry about the minutes. But I think Phoenix might be a worthwhile investment. But it also depends on what they're going to do with some other guys. And they might be more inclined to get another big in there. I mean, Alex Lynn didn't really play a lot this year, and some people have had some positive viewings of him.
Yeah.
But, like, if you want to contend next year, I mean, they're going to be bitter on missing the playoffs this year.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it works out for them. And maybe they could get that would scare me. But, a Kali Stein would be, like, a nice fit for them in the draft. Another defensive center, or someone like that, or Nurkic, you know, someone like that in the draft. But Spencer Hawes, to me, is the more likely Cavalier to come back.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not super interested in. I'd be interested in him coming back, but it depends on what else you do with everybody else.
Yeah,
it largely depends on the draft.
And it depends on what you're paying him.
I wouldn't pay him more than 6-7. I mean, he's a useful big who fits really not well next to Kyrie. Hasn't been as effective of late, especially with Deion. I don't think him and Deanna perfectly gel, except when they go to Indians games together, which is, by the way, did you happen to see the 3 Cavaliers that went through an Indians game together?
I did not.
Deion Waiters, Spencer Hawes, and Matthew Dellavedova. Think about that for a second.
It's like,
doesn't make any sense to me.
It's like the Hells Angels of Cavs Twitter. It's just everybody that they hate.
Yeah. No, Tristan Thompson wasn't there.
Tristan Thompson probably was invited and then backed out because no one can make sense of what they want to do with him. But that's a topic for another time.
But with Hawes, I like Hawes. I think he's a very useful skill set. I think it fits very nicely with Kyrie, especially.
Mm-hmm.
But he's such a defensive liability, and he isn't a great rebounder against certain styles of bigs, that I'm not interested in paying him more than 6'7" for three. I don't think he's a guy that I want. I'm not convinced he's part of a core for your long-term building, and I just don't know exactly what he exactly provides more than just the stretching. I think you could get a better investment. I'd prefer the Cavs spacing, more the better spacing that comes from them getting a three who can stretch the floor, than I guess going back to Hawes. And then you get maybe you just see what you get from everybody else. But ideally, I'd probably go Cauley-Stein, and then you get like a three who can stretch the floor. But if they brought back Hawes, I wouldn't be upset about it, but also do worry that, what are you giving up defensively behind a weak set of guards?
Yeah, I think that the long term implications of that are worrisome. I feel like there's a lot more useful ways that you could go around this. Like, Hawes has a lot of value to this team, from just what he brings as a rebounder, what he brings as a three-point shooter, what he brings is really as a shot blocker. He's a good weak side shot blocker, and that never really gets mentioned because he's so bad in post-D. But yeah, it makes sense to bring him back for next year. Does it make sense to bring him back 3 years from now? I'm not necessarily sure, especially when you've got so many guys at the center position in the draft that could really, really help this team. Free agency-wise, there's not really a whole lot. If you could bring him back on like a 1 or 2 year deal, I feel like that's kind of ideal, but he's never going to accept that because you know that there's somebody out there that'll throw him a 3 or 4 year contract. So I don't think that he's going to be coming back by any means. Now, where he would go is a very interesting idea to think about. There's not really many places that I think are in the market for a free agent or for a backup center. One that I could definitely see as a possibility is Dallas, which is weird to say.
Let's
but
just throw everyone the big
thing. Dallas is paying everyone in free agency,
yeah.
But also Atlanta, I think,
I
is
like
a possibility.
Atlanta. I like him in Atlanta because he's stylistically different than Al Horford, but he has there is some similarity there.
Yeah, you could play them together mostly because you can play Al Horford with anybody. He's the most versatile big in the league.
I really, really like that, actually. I want Spencer Ross to go to Atlanta now.
Plus, you know that he'd enjoy it because it's the South. They have very similar political interests, and I just think him in ATL clubs is going to go so well.
Yeah.
So what do you pay Spencer Haas?
Unless someone's going to be really crazy and just like decide they want to throw way too much money at him, I think 6 or 7 is the market value for him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see what he does well enough. Like consistently for me to like throw $10 million at him or something.
Oh, absolutely!
Like if anyone pays Spencer Hawes $10 million, I'd probably throw up.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. This is gonna sound crazy, but I would rather this is what I ideally like the Cavs to do with their front court this offseason. This leads a little bit into Varejao. I'd like them to get Cauley-Stein. That's kind of the guy that I'm pegging.
Yeah, he's your Nerlens this year.
Yeah, like he's like not as high end. Not as good defensively, but I think he could fit very nicely.
Yeah.
Tyler Zeller still stays like your backup center of the future. I'm okay with that. Honestly, I really think he's got, to me, besides Deion, he might have taken the biggest jump this season in terms of his effectiveness.
Absolutely. Like, which is funny because he played a lot less.
Yeah. But he was just like, when he got time, he looked really solid.
Mm-hmm.
You don't bring back Anderson at his full price, but you bring him back. Let him, like, he's going to be a good locker room presence for you. This team definitely needs. He probably can't get that much. Unless he goes to a contender, then fine. But, I think Andy,
yeah.
I'm okay with Andy coming back.
and then you go Tristan Bennett. You figure that out. Probably start Tristan. At some point, maybe make the switch and make Tristan your energy big off the bench and make Trevor the happiest person alive.
Yep.
But I think you're fine without Hawes. If you bring him back,
absolutely,
fine. But you take a wing at whatever pick you get, but at the same time.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think that there's definitely options for them to go about fixing this. I think that as far as Hawes is in free agency is concerned, you're gonna have to be willing to pay him, I think, at least $5 million a year. One, because he's never going to take a contract that's structured as weirdly as the one he took in Philadelphia, because I just looked at that and, man. He got paid $4 million in 11-12, $8.5 million last year, and $6.5 million this year. That's strange.
Yeah.
But it seems like he letting him go to hopefully Atlanta or somewhere.
I like Hawes in Atlanta.
Yeah. I think that's probably the best option, because you've got room to maneuver there.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then this brings us to our third topic of the week, which is a trio of Cavaliers who I think leave the Cavaliers in an interesting position.
Mostly because of one of that three. Would you agree?
Yes.
There's only one person
Jared
that makes this interesting.
Jared.
Yeah.
That's I'm going to write about a very heavy data piece later this week, so look out for that on Thursday. That's I'm hoping to have it done by
mm-hmm.
the day after the season ends. But maybe Friday. Maybe Friday's better. But you have Irving, Waiters, and Jack. You have this trio of Cavaliers that, for whatever reason, the Cavs are three ball dominant guards. You know, three guys that basically have very similar, different skills, but they're similar in the fact that they just need the ball in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
Without looking at any of the data, Trevor.
Yes.
Yes or no? Do you think this worked in 2013-2014 season? I say no. I say no in a lot of ways.
Only because it worked when it wasn't Jarrett Jack as the third guard. When Matthew Dellavedova, Deion Waiters, and Kyrie Irving played together, that worked very well. That was actually, like, surprisingly effective. And when you paired either of those guys with Deli, it played out a lot better than when you paired Jack with either of those guys.
Here's the other thing. I can't remember one game where all three of them were effective.
That's an interesting point.
That's one of the things I'm going to look at in this piece, am I right? But I cannot single out one game where all three of these guys were effective. I can remember moments where Kyrie and Deion were both really, really good.
Yeah.
I can remember those games.
You can remember games where Jack and Waiters had really good.
Never Kyrie
games.
And Jack, and never all three
well,
of them together.
There were games when they had good games.
Only
but
when Jack was starting.
Never when they were playing on the floor at the same time where
right.
they both affected.
Right.
You never had a lineup where Kyrie Irving and Jared Jack played together for large minutes and it was effective.
So I really can't remember this like working, and that's problematic to me, because I think the Cavs have money committed to Jack. This is something they're gonna have next year. I think
mm-hmm.
this hinders them next year. I really do. I think if they can
absolutely.
At all this summer, you move Jared Jack.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you can, you do it. But I don't know who takes him. I don't think anyone would really take him this one.
That's a very interesting thing. The first thing that popped in my head was they were next, but some kind of deal with the Lakers, just because, I don't know.
What's the incentive for LA, though?
He's cap filler if they want to trade Powell. Like, if it's some kind of, like, three-team deal and
well,
the Cavs can
if
throw.
If they're going to be, like, the Sixers of this year where they just don't have a lot, they haven't spent a lot of money.
Yeah.
I can see that.
That's just, like, the first thing that came to my mind. But I'm sure there's
that,
some.
That speaks to his trade value.
Yeah.
Like, that really does, if he's going to be a cap filler.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a team that would like to have him around. Sacramento, depending on what they do with Isaiah Thomas this offseason, if they have the room to take him, would probably be able to use him pretty well. But
Golden State's all, like, the perfect, because, I mean, really, when Golden State made trades this season, they were looking to fill Jared Jack's role. That's really what they were doing with Steve Blake and Jordan Crawford.
But Steve Blake's actually been really good for them
right.
this year. So they've got options to move on. I wanted to say Atlanta, but I forget. I always forget that they have Lou Williams. So they could probably use a third guard.
Miami, depending on next year, depending on what happens with Chalmers and what happens with some like Ray Allen and you know Bettier, they could use another scorer off the bench.
Yeah,
but he doesn't fit exactly what they need, but he would provide a service. I mean, he would.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not perfect, but
he's a lot better than Tony Douglas.
Yeah.
But
it's the cost. It's that $6.5 million salary.
That's the big thing. But if the Cavs keep him, I think the biggest thing for them going into the offseason is trying to structure the lineups in a way that keeps all three of them playing, or at least it keeps Kyrie and Jack playing as minimally together as possible, and keeps Dion and Jack playing together as much as possible, because I think that worked out the best of the three of them. Or the best of him playing with either of them. So I think that would be nice. If they can somehow structure it in a way that, you know, Kyrie's going to be playing for this block of minutes, Jack is going to be playing for this block of minutes, and then they're going to overlap very minimally, and Deion Waiters is going to be sprinkled in, and Dellavedova will be sprinkled in wherever. I think that's the way that you probably get the most out of it if he's going to be coming back. Also, if you can get him to, you know, get out of his season-long shooting funk, maybe that would be a good idea.
If you just get the ball in his hand, I think he was, I'd have to look at this on tape and kind of measure it, but I have the feeling that he was more effective playing at the two spot than he was at the one.
Absolutely.
Just get him off the ball a little bit more.
Yeah, if you can
spot
get
him up more.
Yeah, spot him up more.
Yeah, maybe this will be a two-part of this, but I think there's some solutions that can work, but it's going to take some serious effort and strategy to kind of pull that off. This will be later this week, either Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. Don't peg me on a day yet, because it's going to take some time to get homework done in this, but I will do this. But this leads me to a topic that leads into a little bit of our draft bits for the week.
Trevor has started his draft profiles, and we'll have a lot more coming over the course of the next few weeks, but at the same time, I want to talk about two guys in particular, the two guys you started with, Tyler Ennis from Syracuse, the point guard, and Doug McDermott from Creighton.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with Tyler Ennis because it kind of leads off to Jared Jack. As you pointed out, if Tyler Ennis was, if the Cavs didn't have Jared Jack, and they had some other things filled, he'd be a nice value pick at the end of this lottery.
Yep. He is a pure point guard, which I think is what they need. In terms of their backup point guard spot, they need a guy who's really there in the primary role to distribute, and can also hit some shots from outside and spread the floor a little bit. I think that he would offer very similar things to what Sean Livingston offered in the 12-13 season to the Cavs. He's not as much of a slasher as Livingston was, but that kind of role is probably what he would be closer to, and that's probably what the Cavs need more than, you know, a volume shooter as their third guard off the bench. I honestly think that if the Cavs had, you know, if they had a solution at center and they had some kind of game plan at power or at small forward for the offseason, which they probably do have some idea of what they're going to do with that, but we have no idea what that idea is. Ennis would be a guy that they could really consider taking at the number 9 spot. He's currently listed at 14 on Draft Express, 8 by Chad Ford. I think that he's a guy that would fit very well in the system. I compared him in my profile to kind of a less flashy Ricky Rubio, so I think that would be very interesting to play, especially if you're playing him with Kyrie Irving off the ball. I like Ennis a lot. I think that there's some issues that he's gonna have to overcome, mainly his athleticism and his finishing in traffic, which he just doesn't do. But I think there's enough there that he's going to be a very solid point guard. I think his ultimate role is probably is like either the point guard of a very like kind of like a Jameer Nelson type, where he's not really like thought of as one of the better point guards in the league, but he's a perfect point guard for the system that he's running, or he's the best backup point guard in the league.
Yeah, and I think on the right team he could definitely be a really good starter, but obviously going to be a transition from coming out of the 2-3 defense, but I think you can save that money.
As I pointed out, though, he is a very, very solid point guard at prowling around off the ball and generating steals, which is... he did a lot of in the 2-3 zone. I think that's a very translatable skill. And we've seen it with guys like Ricky Rubio and, honestly, with Jameer Nelson. You can hide that if you have the right personnel around him. And I think the Cavs do, because I think Deion Waiters slowly becoming one of the better on-ball defenders.
Yeah, on the team, please. And this looks at McDermott. I view him as more of a 4, to be honest. I worry about his foot speed a little bit big. You can hide him in a certain kind of situation. As we talked about before, and this is not a redrafting thing because we hate that,
yeah,
but if the Cavs roster was a little bit different, this would be a really good pick at 9.
Yeah. I think that he's a small forward. I think that, yes, his foot speed is not the greatest, but he has good enough open court speed, kind of like Tyler Zeller, who doesn't have any lateral quickness at all, but is really good at getting up and down the floor. I think that is going to be... something that's going to help him out. I think he'd be a great fast break partner for Kyrie to have, because he's so good at hitting trailing threes and finishing in the paint on the break. I think that he would be a guy that would fit really, really nicely. I don't think that they're ever going to pull the trigger on him, just because they have just that sinking. There's that sinking concern that him and Anthony Bennett wouldn't play very well together. Is two kind of undersized 3-4 guys. I think that he's a guy that is going to have, like Ennis, a guy that's going to have a very productive NBA career, but really just isn't a guy that the Cavs should be drafting.
I agree. Especially when you have Bennett, like as you said, and then you just have other things you could. There's better picks and fits for that pick,
mm-hmm.
I think. Depending on if they go higher, I mean, or like a little bit later, like they kind of get the run around a little bit with this pick, you're going to get a little bit later. Side note before we do like a crazy mock draft today, if Cavs Twitter is going to die if the Cavs like don't get the 9th pick and they get something later in the lottery and someone gets bumped up ahead of them, like Minnesota or like Phoenix gets bumped up ahead of them in the lottery,
mm-hmm.
Oh boy. But now looking forward to that freak out, that potential freak out.
Yeah.
So.
Even though I think that would help them, given the spots of the guys who would probably be most effective for them, where they're rated in Draft Express right now, I think that they'd be much better served at 10 or 11. But you know, Cavs Twitter's insane sometimes. So
as Matt Moore can tell you, HP basketball. But now, Trevor, I want you to do something, and I'll explain this while you do it. Set the order. What we're gonna do is. We are going to do a – last week, as if you listened, we did a mock draft based on the odds this week. And we'll probably do this from time to time going forth and just maybe closer to the draft. We'll save it and do it again. But we're going to do just kind of a mock right now. Before we get into all the heavy scouting and to kind of know who's all coming out for sure, which we'll find out for sure this week,
mm-hmm.
We're going to do a order. And
I just did the order and we – oh, it's fun.
Okay. So I want you to read off the lottery, tell us what order we're picking, and then I can't remember who
you're picking odds. I'm picking evens.
Okay, so I'm.
And we're both picking the cast pick.
Right. So I want you to read me the order.
You want me to go from top down or bottom up?
Bottom up.
Okay. 14th pick, the Phoenix Suns. 13th pick, Minnesota. 12th, Orlando. You have Philadelphia's second pick. I have Charlotte at 10. You have Sacramento at 9. I have LA at 8. You have Boston at 7. I have Utah at 6. You have Philadelphia's other pick at 5. I have Milwaukee at 4. You have Orlando at 3. We both have Cleveland at 2.
What?
And you have Denver at 1.
Hold up, man.
Who's excited?
Oh, boy. This is going to be awesome.
Okay.
So I have the Denver Nuggets at number 1 is what you're saying.
Yes.
What are the odds on that, by the way?
0.8.
I love this. This is great. This is exactly what I wanted with this. I wanted
mm-hmm.
this to be chaotic and wacky. All right, so let's look at this. So, well, if you think about the Denver Nuggets, I think there's a few really interesting ways you go with this pick, and I think there's two really good picks for this team. I think you either go Wiggins or Embiid. I think that's really the only two ways you go with this pick. And I'm going to go Joel Embiid, and here's why. I'm going to go Embiid because I know there's some serious concern about Gallinari, Daniel Gallinari's knees. But if he can come back, you don't need us. You're kind of this Wiggins would be like a Wiggins has higher upside, but you have a guy who fits in really nicely with Ty Lawson already. You don't always get a chance to get a guy like Embiid at the top of the draft.
Yeah.
He fixes all of your. They have some awful defensive players in them. Like, I mean, J.J. Hickson, for example, Mozgov, JaVale. Embiid presents a chance to really give yourself a defensive anchor, and they have a core potentially of, depending on what they do in free agency and whatnot, and they could kind of figure it out. They would get Embiid, Lawson, Gallinari. I like that team. That's an exciting team moving forward, depending on how the health works out. There's some question marks, but I think Embiid to me is the only pick for that.
Yeah, Mozgov's been really good offensively this year, but I think you let him walk and let him get paid, and that's a nice little combo for them next year. I honestly
could really roll with the Embiid picks in front court.
I think if the Nuggets were going to get a top three pick, I want them at three so they can justify taking Dante Exum because I think he's the perfect guy for them. Embiid is good. Okay, so Cavs pick, you took who I wanted, so that's great. So I guess we have to go Andrew Wiggins just because you take the best player in the draft and you figure it out later.
And he's also I think there'd be temptation to take Jabari, but at the same time he does kind of the same thing with McDermott where it's a trade.
And you don't need yet another high usage guy
or a tweener.
It's
a tweener. The tweener is the more concerned than the usage.
Plus, I think that Wiggins can handle himself in the post, which is promising when you're pairing him with Anthony Bennett. I think you suffer a little bit when you're playing Wiggins and Thompson together, at least immediately, because Wiggins isn't the shooter that you need on the wing.
The defense is huge.
I think Wiggins has enough versatility that he would be perfect for the Cavs.
Yeah, I would go Wiggins too. Wouldn't even think about it twice. So who do I have at three again?
Orlando.
Okay, so I think this is easy. I think you probably go Jabari.
Okay.
You worry about some. They have some intrigue. I think no matter who you took at this spot, you have to kind of figure it out. There'd be temptation for you to take Julius Randle at this spot because they came in from Savage. It'd be a nasty front court dude for the future.
Yep.
But you get there's so much. I think there's just more upside to Jabari.
Mm-hmm.
You can move around Nicholson. You can move around
Harkless.
Yeah, Harkless, and you can figure this. Sorry, I'm drawing blanks.
Yeah.
You can figure that out, and it's just the scoring potential of Parker there is just too much to ask. Not getting a point guard here is concerning to me for this Magic team. But I think they pick again later, so.
Yeah. Also, I think this is a good time to kind of bring up the side note. Zach Palmer yesterday was talking about package. The Magic would actually be very smart to package the 12th pick in one of their young assets to move up to the 6-7-8 range. What are your thoughts on that?
It depends on the team and on what asset would you – I mean –
His ideal situation was if they get a top three pick and land Wiggins or Embiid, them trading back up to get Marcus Smart.
I like that, but at the same time, it'd be really hard for me if I was like, let's say I was Detroit or Sacramento, or the team in that, and even the Cavs, if they're in that range. Those are teams that don't necessarily are logical landing spots for some of the guys you want to give up. That's a problem.
Yeah, I think that honestly one of the best trade partners for them would be Utah, just because they could use another asset.
But would Utah want? I mean, I don't know.
Utah could use Harkless, especially if they're not picking them in the top three.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't know. It's a speculation kind of thing, and it has to work out perfectly. I think.
Yeah.
So I think there's some names that Orlando would call, and they'd be like, "Hi, we'll give you Mo Harkless in our first for yours." 7th pick, and they hang up the phone immediately because they're just not a fit.
Yeah,
they'd have to work out perfectly. But that's obviously, I think a lot of teams would.
It's just an idea to throw around. So I have Milwaukee at 4. I don't think they did. I think that there's still a little bit of room for them to work around here. I'm just going to take the pet pick, and I'm going to take Dante Exum for them. I think that
developing him and Brandon Knight together, you can at least pick one, because I don't think both of them are going to develop into really strong point guards. I think that it's a nice little fail-safe in case Knight doesn't get any better, because he hasn't gotten any better at any point in his career. I think that would be a smart pick. Plus, them being able to fire out the length in the middle of Exum, Antetokounmpo, and Middleton really helps. They've got some nice perimeter defense there. I think that Exum, if they're not picking in the top three, Exum's the smart choice for Milwaukee.
Yeah, I think you can also make an argument for Randall, but.
I think they've just got enough of a logjam there, just because they have to deal with Ilyasova's contract for a couple more years, that I think they're going to shy away from a post player. I think they're taking either a wing or one of the point guards.
Yeah. And that leaves me with, I believe,
Philly.
Oh, okay. So, Randall, easy pick. Mm-hmm. Him and Nerlens.
Best player available.
Him and Nerlens in your front court is nice. Yep. That's easy. But anyway, I don't think really you have to explain that.
Yep. Sixth, I'm taking Aaron Gordon for Utah. Because I think that Utah is in kind of the Sacramento mode. What they've done the past couple drafts, where they're just trying to gather assets. If they aren't going to get one of the top few picks, I think that they just kind of go into the mode where they're just going to try and stockpile and trade for someone, much like Houston did. I think that Gordon is a guy that, if they develop him correctly, could turn into a really, really nice open transition player for a team that's going to be a very good transition team when it's all said and done, when you've got guys like Trey Burke and Derek Favors. I think that they'd be much better suited to go a more wide open style. So I think that Gordon is probably the better pick than Marcus Smart for them, or Noah Vonleh for them at the sixth spot.
Okay, and then I have
Boston.
This is easy for me. I go with Noah Vonleh at 7.
Okay.
I like the idea of pairing him and Jared Sullinger together. You can get Sullinger to stop shooting threes.
Mm-hmm.
You can have, you know, like the bruiser next to Vonleh. Marcus Smart also would draw consideration here, depending on what they want to do with Avery Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
But I think just based on who else is left, and kind of he's the last guy besides Smart that's left on this board that I really like look at as a guy that has the potential to be a very high end NBA player.
Yeah.
Not a first overall pick value, because then who's ahead of him. But I think if Vonleh's ceiling is Chris Bosh, that's a really, really nice pick for the Celtics. It's not ideal for them. I think they'd like to get higher and get someone else.
Yeah. But you can definitely work that, especially him and Olynyk gives you a lot of options with what you want to do on the offense.
You can have your three big feature could be Sully, and then you have to figure out what we're going to do with Sellinger. But Sellinger, Vonleh, and Olynyk's a pretty solid, you know, young front court to work with.
Yeah. I have the Lakers, and I'm taking Marcus Smart, because does that not make a ton of sense?
Yeah.
Like, if there's any player that Marcus Smart is going to take a couple years and learn from, is it not Kobe? Like, that would make a ton of sense. He is the guy that I think is going to be, you know, that prototypical, like, he just has a killer, he just develops a killer instinct and just turns into a monster, especially in, like, late-game situations. I think that that's a very good spot for him to be developing.
I think it's perfect. I think, you know, the lights, the how he deals with the atmosphere would be interesting. Because, you know, he'd be the first Lakers pick after they've been so bad. What kind of rookie season? He probably, if Nash comes back next year, he gets to learn a year under with Steve Nash. Which
yeah,
be
like Steve Nash and Kobe working with Marcus Smart on those aspects of his game. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good thing moving forward for the Lakers.
Yeah. So you have Sacramento at 9.
Well, this is tough. A lot of the guys I like for Sacramento are kind of picked. Where Vonleh to me would be perfect for them with Boogie.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I took him with Boston. They don't really need a center. You know, you can make an argument for point guard, but I'm gonna go Dario Saric here.
Okay.
You know, kind of maybe you could play him next to Boogie and figure that out. Probably the best player available. You don't want to take really a reach for a point guard because you still have Isaiah Thomas and he's pretty good for them. You're not going to get a shot blocker next to Boogie at this point. I mean, you could reach for Kali Stein, but then I think you're probably going to get value out of Saric.
Yeah.
It's not a great fit from what I know about Saric, but I think you can make it work. But I think the more and more I think about this, I think the Kings are one of the teams that really need this draft to fall kind of in their favor.
Yeah.
For them to get a guy that really, really is going to help them move a little bit forward. Like, Vonleh to me, if they're going to pick in that 6 to 9 range, somewhere in there, perfect fit for that team.
Yeah.
Perfect fit next to Boogie. And that's kind of what, if I'm Sacramento, that's what I want more of anything in this draft. It's this guy you can put next to Boogie that's going to be better than him defensively and just let him keep getting better defensively at the same time.
Yeah. I have the other hilarious part of this. We've had Denver and Cleveland picking 1-2, obviously, is king. But we're screwing Detroit out of a draft pick, but that, so I'm all for that as well. Charlotte needs a third forward. They need somebody that they can put behind MKG and Josh McRoberts. And there's the and they need shooting. So there's the perfect guy there. This is a great, 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 great landing spot for Doug McDermott. Bring him off the bench immediately. I think it's a nice pace for him to play at. It's a nice place for him to learn defensive system. They've got a nice system to take care of guys that aren't necessarily the quickest. Their system really compensates for that, as is obvious by Al Jefferson and Josh McRoberts succeeding in it. And he becomes their stretch 4-3. You can put 4-3. You can play him really nicely with Kid Gilchrist. You can play him with McRoberts if they want to go a little more wide open. I really like the idea of him landing in Charlotte, so I'm pulling 100% for Detroit falling out of the top 8.
Oh, my God. So I have Detroit at 9 here?
No, Detroit. That was Detroit's pick. You have the second Philly pick.
Okay, so
you've already taken Julius Randle.
Yeah, right. This is going to be a reach. I'm going to reach a little bit on the draft express order. I think at this point they're Philly can afford, because it's going to, they already have Michael Carter-Williams.
Yeah.
You have Nerlens Noggs, you have Julius Randle. You can look for a wing here and pick your best guy. So I think this, like, I reached a little bit last time for Tyler Ennis at some point. I could think I'm gonna look really hard, and I'm gonna say I'm gonna have them reach, and I think I'm gonna have them take. I'm gonna go Gary Harris.
Okay.
There's temptation to take Hood, but I think you could probably figure out what you want to do with your 3 spot.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you could probably find a guy cheap this offseason and just throw him in there. This is a guy that can help you take some of the ball handling duties off Michael Carter Williams. Decent shooter, decent all-around player, fits nicely as your backboard. It's not that I. What's he like defensively? I don't really know too much about his defense. What are his defensive abilities? I think next to Carter Williams, you want a guy who can really get up in girls and defend. And there's not an Oladipo in this draft.
Yeah, I think he's a decent defender. I don't think he's ever going to be like Andre Iguodala or Victor Oladipo levels of defensive potential, but he would be definitely serviceable, and I think you could play him next to Carter Williams, and it would be a very solid fit.
So I'm gonna go Gary Harris.
Okay, I have Orlando's second pick, which works out pretty well because I was just planning on taking the best player available, and that player happens to be Tyler Ennis. I think that if they can get kind of a pure point guard, it'll kind of stop them from making Victor Oladipo into a point guard. I think that him as a distributor with this team would look very nice. He's a guy that could really maximize the potential of guys like Tobias Harris and Mo Harkless, just because he's so good at hitting off-ball cutters. I think that he would be a nice pick, especially to pair with Parker for them. So we'll go Tyler Ennis there. Your last pick is Rodney, or not? Your last pick, Chad Ford has them taking Rodney Hood. T-Wolves.
I like Rodney Hood. Rodney Hood would be a nice fit for them, but Corey Brewer apparently is the greatest scorer of all time now. So maybe I don't think you go big with Minnesota.
No.
I think you have enough. So you want shooting, and it's either Stauskas or Rodney Hood, and I'm preferable to Rodney Hood. Longer, helps you space the floor. I don't think there's a really good reason not to take him. If there's a point guard there, I'd be tempted.
Yeah.
Because you want to, maybe to find to push Rubio, or figure something out there.
Just somebody who can be Barea but actually be good.
Right. But I think with Ennis off the board, I think Hood or really any of the interchange kind of somewhat interchangeable guys like Stauskas or James
mm-hmm.
Young are could worth consideration. I'm very partial to Rodney Hood. And that's a really solid, I think that's a good pick for Minnesota.
Yeah.
So you have the Phoenix Suns at 14.
Phoenix Suns at 14. You said it earlier, so I'm pulling the trigger on it. Willie Cauley-Stein's going to Phoenix.
Perfect.
He kind of slides a little bit, I think, if Cleveland isn't picking in that part of the draft, because there's no real need for him. And Phoenix gets great value there. They get a shot blocker. They get somebody who's he's very raw offensively, but they just need a they just need somebody who can play good defense. In the middle of that, pairing him with Channing Frye or Markieff Morris really helps him.
And Plums is a solid.
Yeah, like you kind of worry about the fact that they just have so many centers. But and I don't know if he kind of. It hurts the development of Alex Len a little bit, but I just think that they go best player available. There's a lot of ways that they could pick somebody in this part of the draft and have them help. So I think that that's probably the best option. My backup option would be Nick Stauskas for them, just because they might need to replace Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah. Well, no, they have time to do an extension. Are you worried about the knee?
Yes, and I also think they're worried about the knee, and I don't think that's why they're going to extend him.
You're on the record. You don't think he's gonna.
I think that he is likely to move.
That's interesting. Okay. Well, that's something to monitor.
So, just to read it back, it was Embiid at 1 to Denver. Cleveland taking Wiggins. Orlando gets Parker. The Bucks draft Exum at 4, Randall to the Sixers at 5, Aaron Gordon to Utah, Noah Vonleh to Boston, Marcus Smart to the Lakers. At 9, the Kings were taking... Who did you have the Kings take?
Saric.
Bobcats get McDermott at 10, 11, Gary Harris to the Sixers, 12, Ennis to the Magic, 13, Rodney Hood to the Timberwolves, 14, Cauley-Stein to the Suns.
I think that's a pretty solid.
If, yeah.
Hope it plays out like this.
Yeah, if Denver gets the number one pick, I don't know what I'm going to do. That's a very interesting idea. And also, it's just hilarious because it's the next pick.
Before we wrap this up today, Trevor, if you could pick one team to kind of just make it, yeah, that would be really funny, just sticking it to the Knicks. if you could pick one team in this lottery to just kind of throw a juxtapon and just kind of make it this a chaotic situation, who would it be?
Detroit. I honestly think if Detroit gets a top 3 pick, they're in perfect way better position than if they're picking at 8. And obviously it's best for them if they keep their pick, but that forces them to do something with Greg Monroe this offseason, and I think that that's best for everybody involved. I think if they get the number 1 pick, they draft somebody like Andrew Wiggins, they trade Monroe, and they just go in saying, you're never scoring on us in our front court with Drummond, Smith, and Wiggins. I think that that's really fun. They're scoring 80 points a game, but they're also giving up 80 points a game. I think that that's really, really fun.
They also could totally get screwed, though, and like, let's say they got the 3rd pick, and the first 2 picks go Wiggins and Parker. Then they're like,
Well, then I think they draft Dante Exum and look to move Jennings.
I'd agree. I mean, I'd agree with that, but I'm saying, like, they could get, like, in a really weird spot.
Yeah, realistically, if the draft is going to go chaos and anybody from 8 down is drafting number 1, or in the top 3, I think Detroit is the team I want to see drafting in the top 3.
Cavs would be good, too, just because I think it could be.
I just don't. There has been enough top 3 drafting for the Cavs in the last 4 years that I think they're done. I think that they're going to end up in 9, 10, or 11.
What happens if they get the first pick this year? What happens?
We draft Andrew Wiggins.
No, what is the
We draft Andrew Wiggins and the lottery gets refigured out. The draft wheel comes.
Yeah, Zach Lowe's opus becomes a reality. But this has been Tuesdays of the Right Sound Euclid. We are going to go eat some dining hall food and hopefully then attempt to play basketball at Ping, which is the rec center at Ohio University,
mm-hmm.
where I keep seeing OU basketball players playing, and I avoid those pickup games at all costs because I do not want to get destroyed.
I want to get dunked on by Nick Kellogg, but that's just me.
It's mostly been Bean Willis and whatnot, but and Tony Campbell. But real quick, you will enjoy OU basketball next year. That's my prediction.
North Dakota State guy is a nice fit.
You will enjoy South Philip.
Because I did not enjoy Christian Ball. His style did not really appeal to me. But him, Phillips with Endor works great for me.
And they got some couple other JUCO guys coming. It's gonna be an interesting team next year in Athens. But this has been 2 days of Red Zone New Good.
Also, keep an eye. I will make a prediction. I think Bruce Indoor can be a decent NBA player.
Absolutely. You've been on this train, and I agree with you.
I'm going to write about this for at some point. Not for Red Line Nuclear, but for a publication work for Badger Magazine. This has been Tuesdays with Red Line Nuclear. You can find me on Twitter at CWMRight. You can find Trevor on Twitter at T Magnati. And we will talk to you guys next Tuesday.